This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Upstate medical student Nicole Sifra's passion for adolescent medicine has earned her the 2015 United States Public Health Service Excellence in Public Health Award. And she's joining us today to tell us more about her commitment. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
So I understand that right now you're currently on track to earn an MD-MPH degree. That's a Master's of Public Health. And you'll do that in 2015. Tell me, what is this degree and why did you choose to get involved in it?
So the MD-MPH program is a pretty new program. You matriculate in the medical school, but also have an opportunity to earn an MPH with the new CNY-MPH program. And so in the middle of second and third year, I took a year off and completed most of the public health coursework and my field placement. And I pursued this because I had an interest in adolescent medicine, and a lot of the issues that adolescent medicine deals with are very public health focused. And also I have an interest in teaching and academic medicine. And so having the MPH really would help me fulfill that goal.
So why adolescent medicine? What drove you, engages you about adolescent medicine, and then what about adolescent medicine? Because I know you focused on something very specific.
So I guess I've always been the type of person that just when I see a need, I really feel compelled to fill it. And when I was a patient growing up in high school and early college, I kind of noticed that the adolescent young adult population was a little bit of this no man's land between pediatrics and internal medicine. And I had that experience, and a few of my friends had those experiences. And when I was a medical student, I started to notice some of the same things. And so I kind of just wanted to be a part of the solution in filling that gap.
So when you say a no man's land, did you think that this population in some ways is being underserved by our current medical system? Is that what you're saying?
I think that it's kind of like it's at the fringe at the end of pediatrics and at the beginning of internal medicine, and the issues that adolescents have are so unique. And sometimes I've noticed that physicians can shy away from those age groups. And so I just kind of wanted to learn more about that so I could be really effective in helping that population.
And perhaps the shying away is also because of the lack of training in specific in the issues that address adolescents. So is a part of it also the need to develop training programming that addresses adolescent medicine specifically?
Yeah, it's interesting because I have a mentor down in Austin, Texas, and he recently spoke at a congressional briefing about training with eating disorders specifically, which is a field I'm interested in, because adolescent medicine is currently the only training program that requires any sort of exposure to eating disorder patients. Not even psychiatry or child psychiatry has that.
Wow.
Which is surprising. And so I think that's part of the advocacy that a lot of people in this field have been a part of.
So getting back to this idea of adolescence and public health, you particularly have focused on eating disorders as an area of great need.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit more about why and what you see or what you have seen, both in your own development, but also now as a medical student, MPH student.
So I think eating disorders are very unique because they are they're classified as mental illnesses with the DSM-5, which is a diagnostic manual used in the field of psychiatry, but they're also medical consequences that need to be monitored and medical signs that need to be looked for. And so it's a very complicated interaction between the medical and the mental health. And in addition to that, all the public health issues, such as familial factors, cultural factors, differences in, who an individual, has as their friend group, those can all be either protective factors or risk factors.
So this peer pressure obviously is going to potentially either be a risk factor or a protective factor.
Right. It all kind of depends on how everything interacts.
So you basically see anorexia, nervosa, bulimia, and binge eating as public health concerns.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the direction you're coming from. Why public health, though? I mean, how do you think that it actually constitutes a public health concern?
Mm-hmm. I think that because of all these different factors that go into the development or lack of development of these diseases are very rooted in societal principles. You know, there's advertising that, you know, everyone talks about that has these unrealistic images. There are,
Well, do you think at this point that the cultural mandates today still are in fact contributing largely to this problem?
I do. I think that that's a major part. I don't think it's the full issue, but I think it definitely has a part to play.
So do you see that it's limited? I mean, at this point, who is most at risk? I mean, it's hard to know what the figures are these days, but mm-hmm. it sounds like still girls are most affected. But what do you see?
Yeah, so, you know, generally adolescent females are most at risk, but we're seeing a lot of males with eating disorders, a lot of women in midlife with eating disorders, and so it's no longer a disease exclusively of adolescent females. And so I think that's what throws people off a little bit, is that it creeps up in these populations we wouldn't necessarily think of.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen, along with Upstate medical student Nicole Sifra, and we're talking about her passion for adolescent medicine and public health, as well as eating disorders. So you've been involved with in an international way with eating disorders. Tell us about that experience.
So I, about a year ago, I started working with the Patient Care Task Force, and that comes out of the Academy of Eating Disorders, which is a professional organization for a variety of health professionals working with the eating disorder population. And the Patient Care Task Force, which is what I'm a part of, focuses on integrating the experiences and the views of those who have suffered from eating disorders and their family members and caretakers into the context of the general organization. And so it's been interesting for me as a future pediatrician to hear the experiences of parents whose children have suffered from these diseases. And I think it's been a really good educational opportunity for me.
Do you think those that information that you're learning from the people who've actually lived the problem will affect treatment protocols or the way in which we approach eating disorders? I mean, do you think it will have a strong impact?
Mm-hmm. I think it will, and I think it has already. One of the gold standard treatments for anorexia nervosa is something called the Maudsley method, which is where the parents and caretakers are intimately involved in not only caring for their child's nutritional needs, but being a part of family therapy. And so I think that the family members are really starting to become more integrated in the treatment.
Do you have any sense that basically what's going on with the cultural and familial factors right now, do you see in an international level that there are similarities? Because this involvement, I guess you've been involved with people from the Netherlands, from Japan, from Australia. Mm-hmm. Are there universals that seem to cut across countries, or do you think that this is largely an American problem?
You know, it's interesting because when I first started studying eating disorders, I thought of it as kind of an American issue because I grew up in America, and so that's kind of all I knew. But speaking with these people from different countries, I noticed more similarities than differences in their experiences. And so I think that's really important just to know that this is a bigger issue, and there are people around the world that are suffering from these issues.
I understand that you are only one of 57 medical students nationwide to win this award, and that it was presented to you in kind of there was a little hijinks involved in your getting the award. You want to share that with us?
Right. So my one of the people that I work with student government is Dr. Julie White. She's the Dean of Student Affairs. And so she had told me that she wanted me to stop by her office, and I thought it would be something student government related, something that maybe I had done that she didn't like or something someone else had done. And so I was a little hesitant, but she presented me with this award, which was a fun surprise.
Very exciting. Yeah. So tell me very briefly then, you know, you've been now involved, you've heard about what's going on in other countries, you've heard about what people who have had the experience, parents and maybe some of their kids, mm-hmm. who've had this problem with eating disorders. where do you see the physician's role? I mean, what can a physician really do in those situations? How effective can they be? Clearly, you said there are medical and emotional issues, but there are medical consequences. So a physician needs to be involved, perhaps in monitoring or what have you. But what can a physician actually do?
I think from my perspective, and I say this in the most humble way possible because I know that I'm a medical student and still have a lot to learn at this point, but I think that the biggest place that a physician can be most effective is identifying the eating disorder and knowing how to look for, signs and symptoms, because a lot of times patients will go to great lengths to hide those. And so these diseases can kind of masquerade as other illnesses. So I think that's really the most important part.
And perhaps supporting the family and finding programming that can be addressing these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see more and more, and locally you've been involved in some organizations that have been dealing with eating disorders. What's your sense of where our programming is today?
Mm-hmm. So so I work with the adolescent clinic here at Upstate with Dr. Karen Thielen, and she's been a great mentor and role model to me, just not in interacting with patients with eating disorders, but a lot of other adolescent health issues. And so she's a wonderful resource to families who are looking to kind of tackle these issues. Also, I work with Ophelia's Place, which is in Liverpool, and they provide a lot of support services and also treatment through the Upstate New York Eating Disorder Service who rents space there. And so they provide kind of the family component, some support groups that are therapist-led, and just kind of a lot of community support, because these diseases can be kind of isolating.
Do you see the kids making progress from your experience?
Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot of hope in the treatment of eating disorders. And sometimes people can kind of view it as a helpless thing, like this person will struggle with this a lot for the rest of their lives. But I think there is a lot of hope. And when I went to the conference for the Academy of Eating Disorders, I learned a lot of new things that people are discovering, new treatments that are coming out, and some studies looking into genetic components. And so we really are learning more every day, and it's a very hopeful field. And so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes in the future.
And that sounds like what you're going to be headed to do.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Nicole, for coming in and sharing this all with us. My guest has been Upstate medical student Nicole Sifra, and she is pursuing an MD, MPH degree at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.